Right. For a number of reasons, I thought that this evening we'll talk about one of the, I guess in the lingo would be called mimafsidei habitochin, the things that cause a person to lose bitochin. And one of them is definitely the challenges, the suffering, the difficulties, the tragedies that go on in the world, because people don't think they're immune. It happens, and more often than not, things happen to the finest of people. And therefore, we, we wonder who says we could trust Hashem that this, that, and the other thing will work out and be good when we see so much that's seemingly contradictory to that. And not only that, oftentimes these negative experiences or occurrences happen to very good people. In fact, the lingo that we use is, we call it tzaddik v'raloi. It seems to be a phenomenon that, according to some, the way some explain it, is it's not just that it seems arbitrary, the good and the bad in the world, but it seems there's a pattern. Tzaddikim suffer, it seems to be something that we see. Some say it's just an irbuvia, everything is mixed together, but some say there does seem to be such a pattern. And if there is, then why should I assume that I could have bitochen and be exempt from all of these difficulties? So it occurred to me, and that's my thesis that I want to present here this evening, that if we can see what we used to call the silver lining, even in the most difficult situations, then we could rethink a little bit this concern or this fear that we have. Well, why should I assume it's all going to be good? But we know all these things happen because at least the challenges and even the tragedies in the world, if they can be understood with some positive context, which is not easy, then it doesn't have to take away from my confidence in Hashem's chesed, because He does chesed. This was a very strange chesed, that's true. This seemed to be a very painful chesed, but chesed nonetheless. And then, of course, we can deal with that. So I have two specific things in mind. One, I just came back from a seminar that we did, and hearing someone speak there about his personal or his family story gave me that sense of perspective. So I'd like to first just very briefly share with that. The individual who was speaking there was telling of his father, a Holocaust survivor, the two stories, I'm confusing them. He's telling of his grandfather who did not survive the Holocaust. And the story that he told was that it was the night before the liberation. I think he said it was in Dachau. And the Nazis knew that they were finished, and they gathered all the inmates, whoever was left, and they in a circle, and they announced that tomorrow, in a few hours, the Allies are coming, you're going to be freed. But in the meantime, they have one last grand finale. There was one individual there, happened to be this individual's grandfather, who they knew. He was a malamed, And they knew that he had not eaten any meat the whole time that he was there. And he had a whole story, whatever it is, but for many years, and he didn't touch any meat. And they decided they're going to... So they basically called him, put him in the front, in the middle of the circle, and they told him, you have two options. You could be free tomorrow when the Allies come. If you eat this chazer right now. And if not, they're going to shoot him. And he refused. And they shot him. They killed him. Now, Mitzad Echot, stories like that can be very, I mean, they are very painful, even 70 years later. Knowing that this is obviously a very pious Jew, because even the years in the camps when he was allowed to eat to save his life, he refused to eat. And then literally to have the strength to die al Kiddush Hashem. And not only to die al Kiddush Hashem, but to die al Kiddush Hashem knowing that a couple of hours from now, next morning, whenever, the Allies are coming and I'm going to be a free man. So it's like the godless, the tzidkus. Okay, so from religious point of view, we say, oh, well, he died al Kiddush Hashem, that's the greatest chus in the world. But when we apply it back to our own lives and to wondering how we can be sure that things are going to work out for us and we're going to have bitochen, here we see a man who tomorrow it could have worked out, and today this Meshuggah Nazi came up with this brilliant idea, and so, you know, it could have a somewhat shaking or disillusioning power. So what I wanted to share with you is the individual who told this story. But before I tell you who he is, I want to tell you another piece of this story. And this individual was not religious, completely secular, you know. And he lived in Israel. His wife calls him up and says she didn't cook tonight. He should, on the way home, he should buy some, you know, takeout. And he's standing in this takeout place. I think at the time it was the only place in Israel that sold basar lavan, that's chazer. And he's waiting online to buy. And it was a hot day and the line was long. And he starts to think about the story that he had heard about his grandfather. And he's like, my grandfather gave his life a few hours before liberation not to eat this stuff. And I'm standing here on a line waiting to buy it. And he says, I don't get it. Something is wrong. And he made the cheshbon like this. He says, one of us is crazy. Either my grandfather is crazy or I'm crazy. But somebody is out of his mind over here. And then he said, like, I really didn't want to think my grandfather was crazy. You know, it's not a very comfortable... He's a man who performed such an act, whatever you say about it. But so he says, I got to find out why my grandfather did that. And it just so happened that at the time, the next day or that day, that night, his next door neighbor says, I want you to do me a favor tomorrow night. There's some rabbi coming to my house next door to speak a little, you know, he's going to give a little class. And I need to show a couple of people there, you know, who also wasn't a religious guy, but I have to show that there's a few people there. So I want you to kind of say, all right, you know. Anyway, whatever it is, he asks this rabbi after the class. He wasn't too interested, but he wants to know why his grandfather did such a thing. And the rabbi said, I can't tell you. I can't answer that. That's too complicated. That's too difficult. But we're starting a seminar. We're having this weekend or next, whatever it was, a seminar on Judaism. It's like a week-long seminar. I want you to come and you'll get the answers, you know. So something within him, you know. He, okay. It's a whole story what he did and how he participated. And he begins to, he left the seminar with a yarmulke on his head and started to keep Shabbos in this. Today, he took over after a short while the leadership of that organization. He's the CEO of Arachim today. He is, through him and his organization, are responsible for, my estimation is, probably a few hundred thousand Bali Tshuvas in the last close to 40 years. So maybe it's 150,000, maybe it's not 200, I don't know what it is. You know, if you count all the families, it's probably more, whatever it is, but a phenomenal amount, both in Israel and other places. They've done seminars all over the place. And this actually, he was at this seminar that we just did now this weekend. And so I thought to myself, like, here have an act, a tragic act, although Mesiras Nefesh is a schus, that there's nothing like it, but a tragedy, you know, a man, hours before his liberation, loses his life in a very cruel, ruthless way. But this act can be directly traced to tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, my guess is, of Jewish lives, and certainly if you take the next generation of these families who are living, you know, as Shomer Torah mitzvahs. So, like, if we just, like, the confusion that the harsher things in life give us, if we could trace it to the benefits that come out of it, it makes it a lot easier. Why the person had to live his life, you know, well, the truth of the matter is, the schus that he has, I know of an Odom Godel who told his son once, he says once he was walking along in Europe and somebody shot at him and the bullet just went right by over here, and he says he thought, he wished it would have killed him. Shot at him because he was Jewish, you know, he would have died on Kiddush Hashem. But, you know, so, but there's still something about it that, you know, how do I know things are going to work out? But when I see the positive, when I sense that there's a cheshbon. Look what happened. This follows this, and here you're talking about one person who died al kiddush Hashem, which to him is the greatest schus, and tens if not hundreds of thousands of people now that are shomer Torah mitzvahs directly connected because of the fact that he thought of this story at such a time, and the timing that his neighbor invited him, and the time that they had that seminar, and then he went, and this, and then he took over that whole movement. I mean, when we see this, if we find this in the difficulties of life, it makes the whole attitude much different, and it gives us a strength to be more optimistic and to be more positive and to search for the Chesed Hashem even in the darkest and most unlikely, at least would seem unlikely, places. Agav, this same person, told the story. I mean, this is all in this book. He has a book now that came out, incredible. It's called, a lot of people have read it. It's very, very powerful. But Agav, he tells another story about, I think that was his mother's grandfather, about a great, great, great grandfather who was the last Jew to be burnt to death in the Spanish Inquisition. He went back and he researched it and this and the whole, you know, like, and now, because of this, it was just, he found a book in the house with the name, and he went to Spain and he checked the records and he went to the town and Hobus, whatever it is. But he has now done in that town, because of all of this that came about just by the interest in who his great-great-grandfather was. I think they did about 6 seminars there, and because there were still Jews, Moranos, that there were like 20,000 Jews living there now, and turning lives around. So we have to see the broader picture. The broader picture is not only, as Hashem says to Eoiv, Eifo Yisi Beyosti Oretz, When Eov is trying to understand why he's going through so much, he says, where were you when I created the world? There's a whole beginning, there's an entirety of an expanse, an eternity. And like, you have to know, you have to see the whole picture. But sometimes, if even in this world, we could see a little bit of a picture, it can restore it can at least counterbalance the shakeup or the unnerving feeling that we get from seeing tragedy, and through that, so to speak, silver lining, at least reinstate to a certain level our own trust in Hashem that, you know, things are going to work out. That was one thing. And it was another thing. This week, I believe it's Wednesday night, it's Yud Zion, I have a yard site for my son that was a young child, 5.5 years old, passed away. I think it's the 42nd yard site. And there was something there too that I think that also, to me, took this tragedy, and it was a tragedy, you know, he didn't die in Kiddush Hashem, you know, it was just an accident that something happened and he hurt himself. But the ensuing benefits that came about, but also like a way of taking away the negativity, the fear, the overwhelming sense of, oy vey, if this is what goes on in the world, how could I ever be optimistic and hopeful and have bitochen in the chesed Hashem? Look what kinds of things happen in the world. But when we see the positive benefits, and that's not to take away at all from the negative, and I must admit, it's, you know, 42 years later, but the negative is the negative. There's no question about that. But if we can see that, then it can compensate a little bit and give us the strength that, you know, why should I focus on the idea that it may not happen, because there are challenges and difficulties and tragedies that happen in life. But when I see the positive aspect, so why shouldn't I more recognize or at least reinstate that concept of Hashem, that yes, Hashem does chesed. Kol ma de'ovid rachmona letav ovid. Everything he does, whether we understand it fully, completely, partially, or not at all. But if I can have some sense of seeing the picture, then it makes it easier to be able to reinstate that feeling and say, hey, what am I, you know, this is the way it is. Kol ma de'ovid rachmona letav ovid. So I don't want to don't want to go into too much detail, but I just would say the following. This was the end of the first year that we had come to Los Angeles to make a yeshiva. And I must admit that there was a discrepancy between the people in the community and those very few people who were involved in actually bringing the yeshiva there. This small group, and, you know, very small group, had the idea of making a yeshiva in the community, which was, you know, what the community needed. Others were thinking about a Jewish high school. You know, a Jewish high school is harmless. You know, it's not going to hurt anybody. It's not going to make anyone change their lifestyle. It's you learn a little bit of Judaism, and you know, and I guess they were hoping it would be co-ed, and maybe not, I don't know, whatever, this type of thing. And to make that breakthrough was up against very, very strong opposition. And I knew that the way to do it, and this was the early days, now they have these programs much more often, this is like first or second year they were doing it, was these seed programs. We bring a group of yeshiva bochurim into the community for the summer, And, you know, then things start to develop. People like them, they learn with them, they attract some of the kids, and sometimes they stay for longer during the year. And this was the beginning of the summer, the end of the school year. And but there was no way to do it. That required money, that required housing, that required food. You know, so we didn't have the infrastructure for it. Well, all I know and all I remember was that, and I guess this time when my mind goes to think about such things, it's a chizuk and it's a schus. If young neshamas need aliyas, but whatever, be that as it may. So that night, as we prepared to travel to Eretz Yisrael for the Levaya, that whole program came about because the mood on everybody was whatever, we'll do anything. And I remember it vividly that the most impossible things would develop within that few hour period of time. And Baruch Hashem, the whole yeshiva came about because of that. After that, this whole group, and then they stayed, and then we developed the Beis Medrash, and the whole thing. So just that idea that sometimes that doesn't diminish the tragedy. But once we can see good coming out of everything, it makes it much easier to not question the Chesed Hashem. We can question, well, why did it have to happen this way? To that I have a different answer, maybe a different story. But just the fact that to see, to look, to search, to see that the divine master plan for good, for great good, in tragic and painful and difficult situations, I guess the word is reinstates any hesitation that we might have in our ability to put our trust in Hashem, because this happens and that happens, the other. How do I know? Yeah, but even those things that you say happen, even those things that you're concerned about, but they're all chesed. And once I know it's all chesed, once I can see in real life situations, so it makes it easier just to rely on the chesed Hashem. Because in truth be told, we've mentioned this here many times, bitochon is not relying that Hashem is going to do X, Y, Z for me. Bitochon is, as David HaMelech said, v'ani b'chastucho b'tachti. I trust in your chesed. My trust is Hashem's chesed is always. Hashem's chesed is endless. Hashem's chesed is complete. V'ani b'chastucho b'tachti. Yogel libi b'yishuasecha. My heart will rejoice in the Yeshua, because since I trust in your chesed, something from within starts to make me excited and happy and confident that things are going to work out for me. But it's all because I'm trusting your chesed, not because I'm starting by trusting your results. I start by trusting your chesed, and then mela, I begin to feel that if I can trust so much chesed in you, then of course the results can work out and will work out and so forth. But the same thing over here, once we could reinstate or reassure ourselves that Hashem, it's all chesed. Hashem does. Sometimes chesed is presented and occurs in some of the most bizarre stories or situations. But once I realize that it's all chesed, then it's a different story. It allows me to reinstate my confidence. To re-strengthen my confidence in Hashem's chesed. And agav, as long as we're talking about it, that it's this week is an appropriate time, I just want to share with you something which I may or may not have mentioned before, I don't know. And that is that 2 weeks before this event occurred, I asked someone to tell a story for a girls' Malava Malka. We had a girls' division, a boys' division. And the person, Rosa, one of the teachers there, told a story about this elderly couple who didn't have any children and went for a brocha to the Rebbe, and they got a brocha, and then they had a child, and he lived for 5 years, and then he passed away, and she was old, she couldn't have another child, and they were very tzibrocha, and they go back to the Rebbe, and the Rebbe says, I'll tell you what happened. This child of yours was a gilgul, a neshama that came back from earlier years, a ger tzedek, who at 5 years old ran away with his Jewish malamed to become a ger tzedek. And when he came to Shemayim after a life of super piety, he was told that he has 5 years that he has to correct in order to reach the highest levels. So he came down, the neshama had to come down, and your child, and this is the privilege that you had. And I remember at the time I was fuming, not angry, fuming at this guy. Like, I guess you'd entertain the girls in Malava Malka. Like, what are you telling them? This is kind of a... You know, albeit maybe it's an important story. Well, 2 weeks later, I was actually on the plane with my wife to bury my son in Eretz Yisrael. And all of a sudden, it hit me, and I turned to my wife, and I said, he was talking to me. And it gave me also such a chizuk, because, like, if we could begin to see that there's a cheshbon. So, I don't know that in the areas that I have bitochim, that the cheshbon is, there's not going to be a cheshbon against. But I know that all of these things that I see should not interfere with my vani b'chastuch b'tachti, because it's all chesed. Why Hashem does the chesed this way and that way? Maybe this is the reason. Do I understand this reason? No. Do I, in fact, in this particular case, I always used to say I know whose neshama it was, but my wife always told me, keep quiet, you know, you can't know such things. But I still think I know. But anyway, but if once we could reinstate the Vani b'chastuch b'tachti, no, there's nothing that occurs in this world takes me off the confidence that Hashem is kol kuloi chesed. If that confidence hasn't been shaken, then the yogin libi bishua secho can emanate from that. Yes, right now I need this, I need that, I need the other thing, but my heart's beginning to feel it because I'm so confident in your chesed. I, those things that stare, this, that, and the other thing, all the difficulties, the challenges, the tragedies, but they're also chesed. I don't understand how they're chesed. Okay, but it doesn't have to, it shouldn't be allowed to interfere with the Vani b'chastuch b'tachti. And if it doesn't interfere with the Ani b'chastuch b'tachti, it doesn't necessarily have to interfere with the Yogei Libi b'shua secho. Because all chesed, nothing, all that is chesed. Okay. But once I know it's all chesed, then something from within can let me know that I just feel it. I feel the chesed coming. I sense it. It's emotion. It's there because Hashem is all chesed. So that's my story. So I just think that we should look in even the most difficult situations in life and try to make some sense out of it. And in the process, as Eov, by the way, did, you know, in all his whole thing, until Hashem told him, Eifo Ha'isa B'yos Di'oritz, he was trying to figure out what it's all about. And then not let it interfere with our Asoga, as Hashem, as the consummate Baal Chesed. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Even though our Shtadlos might interfere.
What do you mean?
In other words, let's say you have a challenge. You have to do something to combat it or to navigate through it.
Okay.
So now you're... Shtadlus might take you in a different direction that really kind of overrides the fact that this particular challenge is...
Well, yeah, okay, but that's always the case. That has nothing to do with anything. I mean, that's always Shtadlus. Shtadlus can't be a deterrent.
right,
to be tochen, and hishtadlus can be an enhancement to be tochen. And that goes, I think, as follows. Hishtadlus can be a deterrent because I'm looking and focusing on what I'm doing, so I forget that it's all that Hashem's doing. But it can be enhancing. The Beis Halevi writes that how much hishtadlus should a person do, enough that he should be able to have bitochen. In other words, according to his approach, the Pshat says that hishtadlus works out. You know, for example, like I say like this, I have a, whatever it is, my budget. I cannot trust, I don't feel the bitochen in my heart that if I sit and do absolutely nothing the entire year, that I will be able to cover my budget. But I do feel in my heart that if I'll, you know, let's say, make 2 phone calls a day, you know, every day, if I'll do a little bit, then I do feel confident I'll be able to cover my budget. So the hishtadlus is what's allowing me to reach that level of bitochen. Because I can't feel it on a lower level. I can only feel on a lower level of hishtadlus. I can only feel it. It works both ways, I think. So. Okay.